If you want to eat the sausage, you might not want to know from what or how that sausage was made. Many apparently think you should not know, and thus have proposed laws in states throughout the United States that would prevent recording the events that transpire on a farm or in a processing plant without written permission. The number of ag-gag laws that have been proposed throughout the United States leads us to ask, should consumers be allowed to know how our food is produced? And conversely, should producers be forced to show how they produce food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 919th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Luganville who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Ricochet on the board. Hello, Rick.
Good day, Michael.
Producer Kelly Bayer on the stories. Hello, Kelly.
Well, hello, Michael.
Folks, we can file this one under Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Looking back, as I am wont to do periodically, it's easy to see that the farm of my youth was a place of living and dying, and that all the living, the people, animals, birds, plants, we all knew what was coming. We, the living, tried to be kind to those dying, but try as we might, the process was never really pretty. Picture for just one of many possible examples a barnyard in which chickens are hopping about without their heads, hearts pumping blood into the air until there's no blood left to pump. No, the process of taking lives to live our lives was never pretty, but when it gets right down to it, we must kill to live. We, the living, has since moved off the farm and into town. We no longer must kill to live. Others in distant factories do that job for us now. And hey, to hell with all that chopping off all those chickens' heads anyway. Our newly acquired distance from the source of our food allows us to forget about the messy business of living and dying on farms. And in fact, living in the city makes it easy for us to think that our food should come without the messiness of living and dying. The question of whether we can take lives, as we must take lives, without being unseemly or even cruel, has led many states to propose laws to prevent recording what transpires on a farm or in a processing plant without the owner's written permission. These ag-gag laws lead us to ask today, and I'm going to ask it from both sides of this of the equation here. Should consumers be allowed to know how food is produced? And conversely, should producers be forced to show how they produce that food? Well, here to help us ponder some questions, we have Emily Meredith from the Animal Agriculture Alliance and Paul Shapiro from the Humane Society of the United States. Emily, we're going to start with you.
And, sounds good.
Good. Now, first, a little bit about the Animal Agriculture Alliance. Who are you?
Well, we are a national nonprofit organization. We represent, we were founded in 1987, and we like to say we represent everyone from farm to fork. We, that includes individual farmers and ranchers, packer processors, veterinarians, and then national associations that represent individual protein groups. So we do it all, and we try to educate the consumer and the media about how food is produced and address their concerns. And really work on behalf of the industry to let people know where their food is coming from and let them know the farmers and ranchers that are producing that food every day.
Good enough. And we always like to ask, who pays the way?
Well, we are funded through individual donations.
From?
From farmers, ranchers, all of our member organizations, individual farmers and ranchers, and national associations, again, that represent individual protein groups.
Fair enough. Let's go to Paul Shapiro, who is with the Humane Society of the United States. Paul, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thanks for having me back on, Michael.
Pleasure to have you back. Let's see, the Humane Society of the United States. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
The Humane Society of the U.S. is the largest animal protection charity both in the country and the world. It's perhaps best known for the work it does for dogs, cats, and wildlife. We run the nation's largest network of animal sanctuaries, wildlife rehabilitation centers, and more. We also provide enormous free spay-neuter services for thousands of dogs and cats every year. But we're interested in the treatment of all animals, including animals who are raised for food, which is what brings us to the topic here today about the meat, egg, and dairy industry's, quite frankly, pretty sordid track record when it comes to animal cruelty, and now not just causing animal cruelty, but trying to cover it up with these ag gag proposals as well.
Okay, fair enough. And we ask, who pays your way?
HSUS is supported by a vast number of Americans and folks from other countries who donate, oftentimes in very small increments, sometimes, you know, only $25 a year. But there's so much backing for the organization that it makes it the largest of all of the animal protection organizations.
Good enough. And also with us today is you out there, where we are inviting you to participate in this discussion today about what we should see about the way we grow our food. And the phone number is today 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. You can always participate on the forums at metrofarm.com as well. Well, let's start this off. You know, ever since 1906, when Upton Sinclair published his novel The Jungle, the press has kind of had a target for industrial agriculture, and it just goes down through the years from Upton Sinclair, The Jungle, to the John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath, and of course Omnivore's Dilemma in Modern Times. So, you know, the way industrial agriculture has been portrayed has kind of pretty much been pretty negative, but I'd like to ask you, Emily, why all the negativity?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think unfortunately that misinformation and that negativity is really being spread by activist groups like the Humane Society, who have very large budgets, very large staff resources, and they can really spread that misinformation and make the average consumer fear where their meat, milk, and eggs are coming from. And so I think unfortunately, because farmers and ranchers, you know, get up every day and care for their animals, they haven't necessarily been communicative. You know, these are salt of the earth people who just try to keep their heads down and do what they've grown up doing and have been doing for generations, and they haven't been necessarily concerned about, you know, tweeting and Facebooking and getting their story out there. And now, as they recognize that consumers are hungry for that knowledge, they're trying to do better. But unfortunately, we're coming from behind because, you know, these farm families have been under attack for so long by these activist groups really seeking to bring about the end of their way of life.
Well, before I go to Paul and have him respond to you, Emily, I'd like to ask you why you think, you know, groups are attacking agriculture the way they are.
Well, I think that their agenda is one that is diametrically opposed to these farm families. You know, a lot of these leaders of groups like HSUS or PETA or Mercy for Animals have said that, you know, there's nothing more important than promoting veganism, that what they desire is a vegan world. And so I think in order to achieve that, they're trying to make people fear meat consumption in this country and meat production. And so they're attacking that way of life every means possible, whether it be through undercover videos, which they pay for an agent to go undercover under false pretenses and obtain footage. They also use a lot of scare tactics. I myself have gotten an exorbitant amount of hate mail, as have numerous farmers and ranchers across the country, whenever there's an issue that these groups disagree with that's coming up, you know, in the legislature or whatever. And I know that for a fact that numerous legislators introducing these farm protection measures have also gotten hate mail or threats. And so they really are out to bring about the end of meat consumption in this country, and they're going to do it with whatever means possible.
Okay, so you're saying that the agenda then is simply to get rid of all eating meat then?
Oh, for sure.
Paul?
Thanks, Michael. The whistleblowing exposés that have been done by groups like the Humane Society of the United States, Compassion Over Killing, Mercy for Animals, and others have repeatedly led to exposure of horrific animal cruelty. Not just people beating animals, which is bad enough, but we're talking about standard meat industry practices that are so cruel, that are so inhumane, that they really are out of step with mainstream American values about how animals ought to be treated. For example, in the pork industry, it's a standard practice for the pork producers to lock their breeding sows, these are 500-pound social, intelligent creatures, inside of 2-foot-wide cages, so cramped that they can't even turn around. The cages are barely larger than the volume of the pigs' own bodies. And this isn't a temporary holding kennel. These animals are kept in this state of immobilization, lined up as if they were parked cars, for virtually their entire lives.
Okay, can you hold that thought? Paul, we're going to have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to have you finish this response. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio. Michael Olson here. Today, we're talking about the ag-gag laws, as they are so called. Emily, what do you call them? You don't call them ag-gag laws. You must call them...
No, we call them farm protection laws.
Okay, fair enough. Farm protection laws, ag-gag laws, what are they? What do you think about them? That's the question we have on the day. Should consumers be allowed to know how their food is produced? Should farmers be forced to let people into their farms? This is the Food Chain, right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, I think Emily Meredith from the Animal Agriculture Alliance suggests that the advocacy groups who want to go on to the farms and processing facilities to film how things are done simply want to get rid of meat. They want us to eat soybeans or something. And Paul Shapiro from the Humane Society says... Paul?
Well, first of all, there's certainly nothing wrong with eating soybeans. At the same time, though, I do want to point out that this is not a matter of a few rotten eggs or a few bad apples in this industry. We're talking, again, about standard industry practices within the meat industry that are simply rotten, like the extreme confinement of animals to the point where they can barely move an inch their entire lives. And the meat industry's response to these exposés that have repeatedly been garnering criminal animal cruelty convictions, slaughter plant shutdowns, meat recalls, congressional hearings, even new federal policies enhancing the animal protection laws that we have and the animal protection regulations that we have, the meat industry's response isn't to try to prevent these abuses from taking place. Rather, it's just to try to prevent the American people from finding out about these abuses in the first place by trying to pass these so-called ag-gag laws or whistleblower suppression laws, where they want to make it a crime for somebody just to take a photograph of what people are doing to animals within slaughter plants. In fact, in Utah just a couple weeks ago, a woman was arrested for violating, allegedly, the ag-gag law there because she took a photo, or excuse me, she pulled out her cell phone and took a video on her cell phone from a public sidewalk of workers at a slaughter plant abusing a cow by pushing her around with a forklift. And the charges were dropped after there was a national media outcry over this, but the law remains in effect, and that's a law that the Animal Agriculture Alliance supported.
But Paul, let me ask you this. You know, when I was a kid growing up on the farm near Belfry, Montana, the chickens ran free, and then they went back to their coop at night, and it was that kind of farm, kind of like you would think a farm should be. But farms are not like that anymore. You know, we've all since moved to town, and we rely on these giant factories or industrial systems to produce our food, whereas, you know, one farm now feeds chickens to thousands and thousands of people. So is it possible to do that any way that would satisfy the Humane Society?
Well, I think that what's important is looking at the treatment of animals and recognizing that this industry has undergone a massive transformation, just like you suggest, Michael, from one in which animals were outdoors, in which they were able to engage in important natural behaviors that are so critical for ensuring good welfare for the animals, to one in which most farm animals now, in fact, nearly all of them, live on factory farms. They're confined, generally speaking, indoors. Most of them never step foot on grass in their entire life. The first time they may even go outside is when they're on the back of a slaughter-bound truck.
You know, so, okay, Paul, it kind of sounds like city people.
Well, I think that when you look at the practices that the meat industry so routinely employs, you'll find that whether people live in the city or whether they live in rural areas, and most people would be appalled to find out that we have hundreds of millions of egg-laying hens who are locked inside of cages so cramped they can't even spread their wings. We have millions of pigs locked inside of cages where they can't even turn around their entire lives. These are cruel and inhumane practices that, regardless of whether you're a vegetarian or a diehard meat eater, regardless of whether you live in the city or you live in the country, all of us should be able to agree are far too extreme for any humane person to accept.
Okay, Emily, is it true that you're being very cruel and inhumane?
Oh, absolutely not. In fact, I think there's so much misinformation in what Paul just said, I frankly don't even know where to start. He throws around the term a lot, standard industry practices, and I just want to take a moment to explain what that means, because I think that's very important. Standard industry practices is a term that's thrown around an awful lot by activists like Paul, and what that really means is that these practices are those that have been established with collaboration between industry experts, including veterinarians, scientists, animal behaviorists, and ethicists, the people that work with animals day in and day out. And in my mind, those are the people that should be establishing what is humane and what is safe for our food supply, and not the people that seek to bring about the end of animal agriculture in this country. I'll also say, to address your question, that the majority of farmers and ranchers across the country do the right thing every day, not just because it's good for business. I mean, it just makes good sense to do the right thing so that you have the most humane, safest business possible when you are producing food for a large portion of our nation. Again, a statistic I want to point out is that this nation and a large part of the world is fed by less than 2% of our country. I mean, that's really a statistic to marvel at. And I think that what the majority of people do when they work day in and day out with animals to produce our food, they're doing the right thing. And that's what these farm protection legislation laws are meant to protect against. It's meant to guard against activists with a disingenuous, manipulative agenda from going in, taking video footage, using that footage, in most cases presenting it with a false narrative to confuse consumers. And these videos are really meant to shock and awe. And on that, I think Paul and I agree that these videos, and I'm glad he finally admitted it on air, that these videos really are meant to shock and awe the consumer and to really scare them about their food supply. And these videos are not representative of the industry. They're not truthful at all.
Emily, you're very good there, but let me ask you this. Are these procedures cruel, where you have animals confined?
Well, again, these procedures are those that have been established with experts in the field, and those are the procedures that have evolved over time. I mean, I can't tell you how many members I talk to who, you know, are the Animal Agriculture Alliance has been involved in this industry for over 25 years, and unfortunately, I haven't been involved with the Animal Agriculture Alliance quite that long. I hope to, but all of our members, we represent people from all segments of the industry, so pork, beef, chicken, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, we had our national summit a couple weeks ago, and all of our members were kind of saying during cocktail or what have you that during this extreme weather we've been having, a lot of their cattle wish that they would have been inside, like, you know, hogs or chicken. So I think that, you know, a lot of people point back to old McDonald's farm, but you wouldn't want to go back there because the industry has evolved to make our food safer and more humane and make sure that these animals really are being properly cared for.
You know, I jokingly referred to Paul that these confinement operations sound a lot like living in the city, you know, like working in an apartment complex or working in an office building or something. And in a way, it's kind of like us now, you know. We're growing food in the same way we're growing us. Paul?
You know, Michael, it's definitely an entertaining point, but let's keep in mind, we're not talking about Old McDonald's farm versus living indoors. You want to compare it to something that would be more appropriate? It would be more like having 10 people get inside of an office building's elevator and living there for the rest of their lives, never getting out. Again, we're talking about the immobilization of animals to the point where they can't even turn around for nearly their entire lives. And these are standard industry practices. Most of the breeding pigs in our country, millions upon millions of them, are suffering and that type of extreme immobilization. And when Emily talks about experts establishing these, keep in mind that perhaps the most renowned animal welfare, animal science expert in the country, Dr. Temple Grandin from Colorado State University, is very clear that these type of practices, like gestation crate confinement of breeding pigs, need to go, that confining animals in a box for their entire lives just is not appropriate. And in fact, just yesterday, Dr. Grandin was quoted as calling these ag gag bills, and as a direct quote, the stupidest thing that ag ever did. And the reason why Dr. Grandin calls it the stupidest thing that ag ever did is because rather than trying to address the problems, they're just trying to sweep these problems under the rug. They want to prevent people from finding out about how farm animals are so routinely abused on our nation's factory farms, because they know that if people learned the truth about how these animals are so regularly mistreated, that they would be outraged.
Well, thinking back, Paul, to that sweet little farm that I was raised in, that, you know, everybody looks back with a great deal of fondness to the way we were and whatnot. But things were kind of cruel there, too, and it was just the way it was. It was the farm was a place where things lived and died, and those of us who were living, you know, tried to be really kind in the way we dispatched the lives of those that were taking. But it was always a messy process. And thinking back on it, and having my grandfather, you know, take a chicken and hand me the axe and say, there it is, you know, and chopping the head off. And it was a tough thing to do. I don't see anything but cruelty in it, but we had to eat, and that's where we're at right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the bills themselves, ag gag. What is ag gag? What is the farm protection laws? What are we doing? Will we be able to know how our food is produced? And should farmers be forced to allow people onto their farms with cameras and videotapes? That's the question. 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, if you're a consumer, would you want to know what's in your food? Would you want to be able to know how the farmers grow your food and the processors process it? If you're a farmer or a processor, would you want to be forced to allow anybody onto your farm or into your factory so that they can take pictures and use those pictures to show the world how they think you're growing your food? Two sides of the same basic question there. And the question relates to the new ag gag laws, or the farm protection laws, being proposed in states throughout the United States. Emily, you're with the Animal Agriculture Alliance. You favor these laws, I'm sure. What exactly are they? What do they say?
Well, you know, every one of these measures that have been introduced vary a little bit in exactly what they say. But the majority mandate that legitimate instances of abuse are to be reported within a specified time frame. Most of them say 48 hours. And I know that Mr. Shapiro has spent a great amount of his airtime this morning talking about standard industry practices, but these activist groups say that these videos are meant to prevent abuse and to catch farm families, you know, engaging in abusive and abusive practices. And so in my mind, if you are really concerned about animal welfare and you're concerned about preventing abuse, you would be reporting that immediately. You wouldn't be taking footage and holding it for weeks or months in order to release it later at a time that is, you know, most politically convenient or strategized for your organization. And a lot of these organizations are using these videos for fundraising purposes. There have been a number of leaders who have said that these videos are the lifeblood of their organization. They're the lifeblood of their fundraising efforts. And so, in my mind, if you truly care about animal abuse, you're going to see something, you're going to say something, and you're going to stop it. You're not going to wait to release the video footage after weeks or months. So that these laws are really meant to protect farm animals. If there is abuse, then these farm owners want to know, the farm management want to know. Every state has animal cruelty laws in place to prevent animal abuse. And after a lot of these videos have been released, the first time these farm families are even learning of the abuse is when the video shows up on YouTube or on the nightly news.
Well, let me make a shortcut here and ask you the question. Do you think consumers should know how their food is produced, Emily?
I do. I think that they are hungry for knowledge about how their food is produced, but we would encourage consumers that want to know how their food is produced to come to the source. Come to the farm families, come to organizations like ours who represent the and work with the industry and really learn about the stories of these people that are producing your food every day. Don't trust the edited, manipulated version that you're getting from these activist groups who want to bring about the end of animal agriculture. Come to the source.
Okay, Paul, let me ask you the question from the other side. Do you think if you were a farmer that you would want to have anybody be able to come onto your farm or your processing facility with a camera and take images of you and then take those images out and use them to portray you as whatever they wanted to portray you as?
Farmers who have nothing to hide, generally speaking, hide nothing. The fact is, as Emily talks about with these standard industry practices, many standard industry practices are abusive. We're talking about confining animals to the point where they can barely move their entire lives. However, many of these exposés are also finding workers and often management engaging in egregiously, often even sadistic animal cruelty, beating animals. We just had a case in Wyoming about a month ago where five people at this pig factory that the Humane Society of the United States investigated pled guilty to criminal animal cruelty after we had videotaped them ruthlessly beating animals, even taking piglets and bowling them like bowling balls down the alleys of this pig factory. In one case, a pig with a broken leg had a worker jumping up and down on her leg trying to get her to stand up while she was screaming in agony. And these are things that really should be exposed. There's no reason to try to make it a crime for somebody to take the photo. The crime is abusing the animal.
Mia, she got an interesting note from Gary from Hoosier Ag Today. And it was interesting enough that we'll put it on the air here. Perhaps, he says, the public should see how news is made, how special interest in activist groups manipulate the media. Perhaps we need some undercover cameras in newsrooms to show how facts are not checks. Transparency and accountability should work both ways. Don't you think that there's a danger in that allowing anybody on your farm or ranch that they could use that information any way they want, Paul?
Well, what we're talking about here is not about letting anybody onto your farm or ranch. In the case, you know, Emily talks about the mandatory reporting here, and she says that's most of these laws. In fact, none of the laws that have been passed entail that type. We're talking about making it a crime just to take a photo. So this poor woman in Utah a couple weeks ago was charged with a crime, not for going onto a farm, but from a public sidewalk using her cell phone to videotape people out in the open abusing animals. That's what the meat industry wants. They don't want whistleblowers. They want to blow the whistle on the whistleblower, and that's what the ag gag debate is about.
Okay, let's go to the phones and see what listeners have. We're at 831-479-1080, and we're going to go to Sarah in Los Angeles. Sarah, are you there?
Oh. Hi.
There you go. Go ahead, girl.
Thank you. Thanks for having this really important discussion today, Michael. I appreciate it. I've been reading a lot about these ag-gag laws, and I just feel like they're so shameful, and clearly these laws are intended to prevent consumers from learning the truth about what happens, where their food is coming from, and what is going on in these major factory farms that are producing the food feeding our nation.
Okay.
And, you know,
it sounds like you're against the ag-gag laws.
I am against the ag gag laws, and I think if the industry is so proud of its practices, why are they trying to prevent consumers from seeing these realities? Like, what is it that they have to hide? Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I have seen a lot of these videos, and these are the exact videos that Emily Meredith wants to put an end to, and it seems clear that the meat industry is incapable of policing itself, mm-hmm. which makes me wonder about the law. Like, what are the laws that oversee these types of facilities?
Well, Sarah, let me ask you then. would you like to have your home open to anybody who would be able to go into your house and take video or record you doing things and then use those images to portray you as what they want you to portray you? So don't you see a little danger in that?
This is not about going inside people's homes. It's about going inside the facilities that are feeding our nation.
Yeah.
And if they're so proud of their practices, why are they so hesitant to let people see what's going on? I mean, these investigations, these are commercial food operations, and these investigations have resulted in facilities being shut down by the federal government because the practices are so cruel. It's resulted in food being recalled because food safety violations have been uncovered. Why is the industry allowing this to happen? I mean, these are happening under their own noses, and it's the investigations that are exposing what's going on and putting an end to some of these practices that are threatening public health, that are horrific to animals,
okay,
and that are
Sarah,
resulting in the people being cut down.
That was Sarah from Los Angeles. When we get back, we're going to go to Kevin in Nebraska and Elliot in Maryland. And you, the phone number is today, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. The question today we're working is should people be able to know how their food is grown? And should farmers be forced to open up their property and their production to anybody who wants to come in and take images and then use those images however they see fit? So these are interesting points on both sides of this question. And if you think about it for just a moment, you realize how dangerous it could be either way. If we were not allowed to know how our food is grown, or if anybody can go into anybody's farm and take pictures, there's danger on both of those sides. 831-479-1080, right back. Well, what do you think? Should we know what's in our food? Should farmers be forced to allow anybody on their property to take pictures? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We are going to go to line four. We're going to go to Kevin in Nebraska. Kevin, welcome aboard. Welcome to the food chain.
Thank you.
So, Kevin, you're in Nebraska?
Yes.
Cornhusker?
Yeah, I am. But, you know, I'm also a farmer and a rancher here in Nebraska, and I make my living raising livestock. I raise thousands of head of livestock.
Are you cruel?
No.
You're not
and
cruel.
But I don't want my children eating products from these factory farms. And I want to tell you that the Animal Ag Alliance definitely does not represent me or any other farmers that I associate with, for that matter.
What's wrong with the Animal Ag Alliance in your eyes?
They represent these factory farms that we've been discussing and industrial ag. And, you know, I work with the Humane Society of the U.S. here in Nebraska and a lot of other farmers, and we're opening markets for humanely raised products. We're working with sustainably minded family farmers and adding value to their products. We can raise animals and meat products more efficiently out on pasture and letting these animals, you know, pigs be pigs and cows be cows.
Well, good. So you're doing everything right.
Yeah.
Okay, then let me ask you, do you think that your farm should be open to anybody with a camera to go in and take photographs of you and then to use those photographs however they see fit?
We host visitors from all over the world on my farm, and we encourage them to come with cameras and videos, take as many pictures and videos as you want, post them on Facebook. We don't have an ag gag law here. I think those are a black eye to the industry. Now, we don't let trespassers come on our property, and if our employees see something that's going on that's not right, I don't care if they report it to me in two days or 2 weeks or 2 months. If there's a problem, I'm not going to criminalize them because they didn't come to me the moment it happens. If there's a problem, it needs to be addressed. But I don't think we should make criminals out of these people. So we encourage people to come to our farm, and they do from all over.
Mm-hmm. So how do you grow or feed thousands of cattle without confining them in pens? Mm-hmm.
Run them on pasture and finish them on grass and let them do what they're designed to do. And we can do that more efficiently than if we raise row crops and then use that grain and put them, haul it to a feedlot.
Somebody sent
more protein per acre that way.
Somebody just sent me a book that said, the title of it was Cows Will Save the Planet. I think I better do a show on that because it sounds very interesting. Kevin from Nebraska, thank you so much for the call.
Yeah.
Let's try I think I have Elliot in Maryland. Elliot, is that you? Nobody. I don't know what I'm doing wrong here, but I must be doing something wrong because I just lost a whole board full of callers. Well, at any rate, it sounds like Emily, our friend from Nebraska, brought up an interesting point. He's doing everything right, and your constituents are doing everything wrong. So how do you respond to that?
You know, the industry as a whole does everything right the majority of the time. And I think, again, that these videos are not about anyone with a camera. You know, as you've pointed out, I think there are several points. Number one, I think that when you look at this video footage, it is edited. And for the activist organizations to say it's not, you can't take 3 months of footage and release a one-minute clip and say it's not edited. That's just, the math doesn't add up there. So, again, to your point, with anyone with a camera or coming in, I think you can make anything look bad in 1 minute.
That's just what I'm wondering. You know, it doesn't take much to make anything look bad,
right.
Even something that's good.
Michael, we have to keep in mind that prosecutors are relying on these videos to obtain criminal convictions. Meat recalls are being issued. Slaughter plants are being shut down by the USDA. These videos are legitimate. They show real abuse. They show real food safety problems. And time again, the response from the industry is to try to fabricate these claims that, oh, they're, you know, if they're isolated incidents or they're edited. But the reality is that they're real. These videos are real. And that's why the Animal Ag Alliance wants to criminalize merely taking a photo of what somebody is doing at a slaughter plant or a factory farm.
Okay, Elliot, you're
Michael,
up.
Can I just make 2 points?
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Emily. Make your 2 points. And then we'll pick up Elliot.
Yep. I was just going to say that, you know, these videos are very edited, and not to mention, you know, as you pointed out, we also have security to think about. You know, the farms and ranches I've been on and toured, and that's been many, you know, they go to great lengths to make sure that our food supply is very secure. So I think we also need to keep in mind the security issue. If you have people going on to farms and ranches or into slaughter facilities and going on under false pretenses, I mean, that's a security issue, and food safety is the utmost concern, and we need to be mindful of that, and that again is why these laws are so important, because you don't want people misrepresenting their true agenda for being on a farm or ranch.
Paul, quick response on that.
In the interest of time, I would just let what the callers go. I'll just point out that the fact is that in Utah, this poor woman was arrested from standing on a public sidewalk using her cell phone to videotape what was going on outside of a slaughter plant, and that's a law that the Animal Agriculture Alliance backed and supports.
Okay, we're going to pick up.
Paul's made that point several times.
Several times, yes. We're going to pick up Elliot and Noah when we get back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Mike Lolson. Today we're talking with Emily Meredith, Animal Agriculture Alliance. Paul Shapiro, the Humane Society of the United States. I think fair to say that two good people on opposite sides of a very tough issue. This is the Food Chain. We will be right back. Pick up your phone and join us at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, so much to talk about. Should consumers be allowed to know how their food is produced? Should producers be forced to show consumers how they produce that food? Holy smokes. Elliot, what do you think?
Well, I'm just really surprised that the meat industry is so desperate that it wants to actually criminalize taking photos at factory farms, not necessarily family farms, as Ms. Meredith has described also, but at factory farms.
Well, wait a minute. That's exactly what puzzles me. Is there a line in the sand that says you can take pictures of factory farms and not family farms? I have a friend, Joel Salatin, out in the Shenandoah River Valley, who's had a sick cow way down at the bottom of his pasture, and his people would come by and they'd take pictures of it and report them to the authorities. And so, you could do everything almost exactly perfectly, and somebody can take pictures of you and make you look bad, Elliot.
Well, I suppose that's true, but I don't think that the photos that we've seen released by the animal welfare organizations have been making people doing good look bad. I think we all know from the shutdown of the plant out in California to a variety of others that these weren't people doing good. And I just have a question for Paul, and that is, how can we help fight these ag gag bills?
Well, there you go, Paul. Answer the question. Thank you, Elliot.
Well, thanks so much, Elliot. I appreciate the call and the question. And, of course, so let me just say I agree with you that these videos are showing rampant animal abuse, not isolated incidents. At the same time, the best way to help fight these ag bills, about a dozen states have introduced them in 2013. Every single state so far has defeated them. They have not been enacted. One of them is currently on Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam's desk right now. However, on Friday, the Tennessee Attorney General ruled that this bill is probably, or what he called it, quote, constitutionally suspect. So it'll be waits to be seen whether the Tennessee governor will sign or veto this bill. But no matter what, the best way to fight these bills is by sharing the videos from the animal welfare groups. The reason why the meat industry wants ag gag laws is to prevent people from seeing videos about what happens to farm animals. So the best way to combat them is to share them via Facebook or Twitter.
Let me ask Emily here, because that's a very interesting question. Emily, there's like you said, there's 2% of us growing food for all the rest of us.
Correct.
And 98% of us now live in town, and we think that there should be no cruelty in agriculture. So what are you going to do? How are you going to fight this notion that people can come into your farm and take pictures of you and make you look bad?
Well, we're going to do everything we can to support our members who feel that these bills are necessary. The impetus for these bills really came from farm families who were looking for a recourse against these activist groups who took footage, manipulated it, and released it direct to the media. And, you know, a lot of these farm families just want this to go away. One perfect example is Betancourt Dairy. There was a video released there, and it was actually the owners of that dairy farm who turned the video over to the authorities to ensure that their employees who had done wrong were brought to justice on animal cruelty violations. And I think that it underscores a very important point, which is that it's not these bills that need to be examined, it's the agendas that are promulgated by these activist groups. And that's the agenda that we need to examine. The majority of farm families in this country do the right thing every day. They should be commended for doing so. And there's many checks and balances in place in the industry to ensure that animal abuse doesn't happen, that our food is safely produced and humane.
Emily Meredith, Animal Agriculture Alliance, Paul Shapiro, the Humane Society of the United States. You know, you two have a real tough there, and from a consumer's point of view, you got to think, well, you know, we really want everything to be done correctly, and yet, you know, can it really be done without the messiness of living and dying? Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Thank you all for tuning in. Join us on The Food Chain page at metrofarm.com.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.